Welcome to the Immigrant Entrepreneurs Show, where our mission is to inspire, impact, and influence other immigrant entrepreneurs to follow their dreams and create the future they want. My guest today is Anshul Sharma, the owner and founder of Gold Soil Realty. Anshul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here. Couldn't have imagined to be on a podcast, on an immigrant podcast, so I'm pleased.
Thank you, sir. You have an amazing story. I can't wait to share your story with our audience, and I know it's going to be a huge impact that you will make on people that are listening or watching the show. So, Anshul, please give us a quick idea of. I know you're not in the U.S. right now,
yes.
But give us a quick overview of what's going on in your life and where you are, and you know what you do, and then we will get into the details.
I don't know how back in time you want to go, but right now I run a land wholesale company, a subdivide company as well. We do quite a lot of land investment. So right now I'm in the phase of really scaling the business, as we say, and that have taken me to different countries. I was in Egypt. Now I'm in Philippines. A couple of days back, I was in my family in India. But if I have to summarize, we are really scaling the operation. That's taking me to places for training, process, systemization, leadership, everything combined. So, yeah.
That's very interesting. So, but for the people, you know, we will get into the, because I'm familiar with the process and with land investment, and we'll get into that. But yeah. So where were you born, Anshul?
I was born in a very small town in India.
And then you came to the US?
Well, born in India, I spent my first 25 years in India, and then finally got the opportunity to come to the U.S. I came actually through education, right? And therefore my background is kind of a little bit different than you know what other immigrants that I heard and you know spoke to, because I came to this route of like really getting in an MBA school, and kind of putting me into that position where. Yeah, it was great. It was an MBA school. It's all fancy. And I enjoyed my 2 years. And that put me into a corporate world. And I went into a corporate world and I loved it, right? And I loved it because I was just learning left and right. Like, you know, it's American corporate, like the dream. Like people dream about working for billion-dollar companies, mm-hmm. having a great position, six-figure salary, you know. And I came and I got that and it was amazing. Until I found that it's not dramatically different than having a job maybe in India, Switzerland, wherever you are in the world, right? At the end of the day, a job is a job. And I have a huge respect for, you know, the jobs out there and what I did. But that's where I know that that's not where I'm going to end in my life. I'm a more wild character. And so any job cannot contain my kind of like, you know, the wild side of me, which is like grow, experiment, fail, you know, that kind of stuff. So while I was in the job, I was trying different opportunities. And, you know, land wasn't the first one that I kind of ran into other opportunities as well, stock market, digital, all that kind of good stuff before I really found land. And then I liked it. It kind of, was suitable what I was trying to achieve at that time, having a W-2 job. I had a very good W-2 job, so it was very hard to kind of. But yeah, I was looking for change. I know I can do bigger things than what I was doing. So yeah, it just came through. It just has the right fit for me. I was never a land guy. I did not ever dream of running a land company, none of that. But yeah, it was just the opportunity. It just kind of struck to me and I ran with it. Yeah.
So can you tell us, because you know when we say land, usually people think, okay, you find a piece of land, you walk the land, and then you buy the land, and then you build something on it, and then maybe at some point you sell it, or you do something with land. So can you walk us just quickly through the process when you say land? Because, you know, I know, or I estimate, I believe I know what size of a business you have and you operate and you own, that we will get into it later. But, yep. You know, you cannot scale a business like your business. Uh-huh. If you always want to go see the land and walk the land and talk to the neighbors and see what the situation is like. So take us quickly through the process, what it looks like.
Yeah, so it's interesting because that's what brought me into the land business, that I, you know, back in the days, I got a couple of mentors and he said, look, you never have to leave your place. You never have to see a single property that you buy or sell, and you can do it from the comfort of your home. I said, okay, it checks all boxes for me. And then he put the cherry on the cake saying, you need no money to run this business. I said, awesome. I got no time and I got no money. And you're telling me all I need is an internet and laptop? Sure I do, right? And so we have probably transacted around 850 plus properties by now. And it's only three properties that I have seen. One, because my wife and I were bored on that weekend. So we thought taking a drive, it was 45 minutes out. We got nothing else to do on that weekend. The other one, I accidentally bought a property with a billboard. It came with a billboard. I did not buy the billboard. It happened to have a billboard. After I bought the property, I came to know it has a billboard which spits money. My wife was like, we got to go see that property. I said, sure. And the third one was a 100-acre plus parcel that we wanted to subdivide. And we said, you know what? It'd be nice to go and take a tour and see how we can subdivide that property. We did not got anything extra going to the property, but it was just a weekend getaway to go see a 100-acre and come back. Those are the only three properties I have ever seen after transacting more than 850 land parcels. So, yep. I mean,
wow. And,
which is fascinating. That's the beauty of being in the United States about the country. You have online data, you have online resources. Man, you can make a cut in this country. I mean, I don't know where else in the world you would.
Like, that's so true.
Is oversimplified in this in this country at this point. So anyways, I kind of go into a different, I digress.
Right. But yeah. Right. So, okay. But when you don't see the land and, you know, when you sometimes don't, are you always familiar with the area where you buy land, or what does it look like when you decide to buy a piece of property?
Yeah, we familiarize ourselves a little bit about the area and stuff like that, but nothing to the extent that a common man would think that they need to know about the area before they can buy a property there. Like, we kind of know where we want to go. We have a criteria. If Walmart is there and they have spent like hundreds of millions of dollars deciding to be in that county and state, you know what? I think I'll be good. If there's a Starbucks, I think I can go and flip land, right? If there's a highway, I can go and flip land. So we have certain big criteria where we want to go, which direction we want to go, but not necessarily anything over extensive that we are thinking about it for 30 days before we kind of go into that county or state. No, nothing like that.
I see. And when you, so is it, was it too good to be true, or is it really the case that when that mentor told you, you don't need money, you don't need nothing to buy this house, to buy these properties, is it really true?
You know what? There is nothing I found that too good to be true unless if you put your head and mind to something, there is nothing too good to be true. Yes, he was talking about very extreme case. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I was hungry, man. And I took that extreme case and make it a actual case for me. And I just kind of keep repeating that process over and over again. When he said, you need no money, he was right. But it was a very extreme case, how you execute on it. But I bought into his agenda. I bought into his dream. I bought into his thing because I was looking for something bigger than me. So nothing was too big for me not to perform and kind of accept it. So I said, oh, you are saying no money? And that's the novice side of being an entrepreneur, right? Entrepreneurs tend to be a little bit novice when it comes to opportunity. Yeah. Oh, you are telling me that's an opportunity. You know what? I'm going to go and grab it, right? So the childlike behavior that exists in an entrepreneur where they don't analyze things and they get carried away with opportunities until they make them actually happen. That was the behavior. He said, no money and work it from home. And I literally took his words and, you know, close, double close assignment. I did not, like, in the first 3 years, I did not buy a single property.
Oh, wow.
Like, nothing. Everything was assigned. My bookkeeper was like, you do not have money going out. you only have money coming in. Like, when do you buy these things? Like, why there is only one directional flow of money in your bank? How should I reconcile your books? Like, how should I know when you bought the inventory? Because there is no wire out here. I said, dude, I got no money to buy these properties. There can only be one way, which is come in later. Now, 6-7 years forward, yes, we bought a bunch of properties that we think are a good fit, and we buy them because we got to subdivide them or do different things. But when I started, I got no money. I said, dude, that's how it's going to roll. So, yeah. And yeah.
So when you got started, were you doing, you know, yourself putting all the hats on, making sales, making running comps and finding properties, doing all the things yourself?
Yes, I did everything myself for the first 3 months. And then I hired my wife. We didn't go too far, too many days before she said, you got to replace me with somebody else because you have given me all the jobs in the world that nobody would like. We're just putting this stuff on Craigslist, asking me to call the county, and those people never pick the phone, or they pick the phone and never give me the straight answer. Mm-hmm. So I'm not doing this. Okay. Either give me a better job or I quit. The message was loud and clear. And that's where I went out and hired my first person and the second person and that kind of stuff. So that's how it went.
I see. So has the model itself changed since you started the business? By the way, when did you start it?
2018.
Okay.
Yes.
Has the, let's say, the foundation of your business, has anything changed at the model itself, or has it been the same since ever?
You know what? That's a very good question, because still, and people get surprised, say, dude, you're running a 7-figure, about to be an 8-figure business, and you still run it the way that you did your first deal? And I said, yes, because I can. You don't need money. As long as you don't need money, why just... you not go down that path and completely exploit it, right? So we still do double closing. We still do assignments. None of that needs money. And I see new investors coming in. Oh, I have to raise the capital. Oh, I need to find investors. Like, no, guys, you got to get creative. Money, making money has a lot to do with creativity. And if you are looking for all the right resources to come to your desk and help you build the business, that's not how businesses are built, right? So we still run 90% of our property. We don't buy them. And we do about 15 to 20 every month. None of properties we are buying. Because if we started buying everything, we don't have enough money to turn these around and before we, you know, have the money come back in. I mean, we have a pipeline filled of a lot of properties right now. So yeah, I guess I answered your question. But yeah, I mean, we still run the business like a bootstrap business we used to do 6 years back.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And what would you say is your, let's call it, unfair advantage versus all the other people that come and go and complain and, you know, never get anywhere, and you keep doing the same thing but on a very high and successful level? What is it that you do different than all the others?
Man, I show up every day. I guess that's my, like, people, like, December 25th, January 1st, Ramadan, Diwali, you're going to find me, like, I'm showing up every day because that's my thing. Like, yeah, I mean, you need work-life balance, but showing up every day with a great attitude. I think that has been my secret thing. And second thing, like, you know, I read this book from Donald Trump, which, The Art of the Deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he says one line in that book: If you have to think, you might as well think big, right? It takes nothing more extra from your pocket to think big. And that struck me, man. Like, when I was starting business, I was reading all these books, always fascinated what, you know, big leaders have to bring to the table. Read this book, The Art of the Deal, still one of my favorites. I think quite underrated book when it comes to business. But that guy literally bought the New York City by just thinking big and got nothing in the pocket, right? He convinced the bank, he convinced the city officials that he's the right guy to buy all those distressed properties in the New York City. And that blew my mind. Like, okay, he's buying millions and dollars worth of real estate. We got no money in his pocket, and he's just thinking big. Mm-hmm. He's a great communicator. He can imagine things, and he's doing it. I'm like, I'm just trying to buy a half an acre property outside of Boston. Why can't I do that when he can buy a New York City, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of a mindset. So yeah, I mean, that would be my thing. And yeah.
So when you show up on Diwali, on Ramadan, on Christmas, New Year's Eve, there must be, I assume, there must be a why. There must be something that keeps the fire in you, right?
Yeah.
What is it for you that keeps on shul going, keeps on shul showing up day for day, no matter what goes around you?
One, I've always been a guy who liked to work, okay? And I found this very interesting over the years in my life. I hated school, but I didn't hate work. And once I found things in my life that I really like to work on, I was like, there is nothing, no reason for me to not work. Like, people have this work-life balance kind of thing, and I think it's freaking me so overrated at this time in Australia. Like, I want work-life balance. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm coming from an opinion that work is a major part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You rather choose something that you like. You don't even have to love it. Even if you like what you do, you will not gonna feel tired any day. And yes, it blurs the boundary between when should you stop working and pay attention to family and if you have kids and all that kind of stuff. But I rather have the problem of loving what I do and overstepping the boundary when I should pay attention to family or the kind of stuff, rather than being a frustrated person that I do not like my work and I take that frustration home. That's a worse problem to have versus you enjoying your 12 hours or 11 hours and 8 hours. And maybe sometimes you go overboard because you love your work so much that you might find a little bit less time for your family. And that is a better problem to have in my scenario and could be adjusted versus the other way around. So for me, it just I love what I do. And I very consciously said to myself, I'm not going to do anything in my life that I do not like. Period, end of the story. I love my life. I'm a person who wakes up. I need to smile every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a childlike attitude. When I wake up, I want my life to be exciting every single day, no exceptions. For that, if I have to work hard, I'm gonna work hard, whatever it takes. But I do not want to wake up one day in my life feeling miserable when everything was in my hands. So right now I'm in Philippines. It's night. What time it is? It's 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't bother me.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't bother me. I work on something that I love. I have my entire team next door, 15 mm-hmm. property analysts working hard, working with me. I look at that site and I say, you know what? If I'm here for 2 a.m. for these guys, training them, that is way better. You working on a shitty W-2. Sorry, we might have to mute this part. But
no, it's okay. On
crappy W-2 job for $170,000 right. Just to please somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Bless, man. Like, if you can find something in your life mm-hmm. that you don't get tired for the rest of your life doing it, in this day and age, that's a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps me going. I don't mm-hmm. feel tired anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel I have to ask you a question for the sake of clarifying, because when you say I enjoy what I do, then yeah. somebody out there might also feel like, okay, everything is easy, everything is going smoothly, everything works according to plan, which I think is not, you know.
Yep.
So can you tell us about, you know, what does it mean enjoying and showing up and doing the work? Versus, hey, everything is actually easy, which I truly believe is not. So tell us more about that, please.
That's great. Yeah. And that goes to the personality of an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs do not like things easy. If their life is going easy, they are miserable. If you are a true entrepreneur and your life is going smooth for like 5 days, nothing mm-hmm. is happening, you're like, what's going on? Why right. haven't got that phone call? Why haven't got that email? Why haven't had opportunity? There is something that's not working right.
Right.
And so that's the life, you know, that's our life. But we are so in tune with that. We like it that way, that even if it's difficult, we have some kind of fun out of it, right? It's going to the gym, man. I mean, gym has never been easy, but for a few people, gym is fun. They are in pain. They are sweating, but they are loving it. They are they show up every day. And it's the same thing. And I don't know how I got that. It just, maybe I'm like wired that way. I don't know. But I enjoy the hustle. I enjoy the thing that I wake up and I solve something and I find results and I move on. I like the fact that I fail. I laugh at myself. I shrug it out and I move on. I like that kind of journey versus going 8 to 5. I don't know. It just, that life is too easy and flat for me and I don't get enjoyment out of it. So that's why I've kept it this way. That's why I have been scaling the business ever since I started the business, because I don't know what else to do about it. It's a baby. It gotta grow. Like, how can you stop a eight-year-old kid? It gotta go to 14 and 21 and 42. It's a natural progression. So for me, business is a natural progression. So just kind of keep the things on, I guess.
Anshul, you have an international team. As far, obviously, you're in the Philippines. It's 2 a.m. Yes. in the Philippines. And but you also, when I followed your content, I saw that you were in Egypt actually a few weeks ago. So tell us more about that. How does it look like running an international team from the US, or even when you travel, you're not even in the US, but you're located somewhere else. What does it look like?
Man, that's the highlight of my life, Ali. Me working with so many nationalities and people, experiencing them, their culture, their food, the country. If anything I did great about this business is like traveling and meeting people. And, you know, it just so happened I hired one person from Egypt, and that was 2-3 years back, a 21-year-old kid. And he was like, absolutely, like, you know, you say you find diamond in the rough. Well, I think I kind of ran into her at that point. And there are a couple of people in my company that I can, you know, say, you know, I can say that, you know, it was like I got lucky kind of thing. But long story short, I found her. She was amazing. First year, she put $1 million properties worth on the contract for me. 21-year-old. She still goes to college.
Wow.
You talk about people, right? The people who are driven in their life, it doesn't matter whether you're in Egypt, India, Switzerland, the people who are driven, they will find a way to be successful regardless, right? So here she comes. She did all these things. And then she built a team over there. And now she got a team of 13, 15 people.
Oh, wow.
Teaching them how to negotiate, teaching them how to follow up, teaching them how to close the deals. It's fascinating. So I have to go. She already built the team. I have to go and see these guys and maybe train them to the next level. That's how it happened in Egypt. That's how it happened in Philippines. Found an amazing resource. She still works in the company, built the company with me. Now we are about 20, 25 people in Philippines in this office. Next door, we have 14 property analysts.
Wow.
Comping properties. Fascinating. How these things happen, don't ask me, but it's just a natural evolution when you're running a business, I guess.
Absolutely. Did you have a plan to grow it to this stage when you got started into the lamp business?
Nope. I knew that I have to grow it, but I did not have plans to grow it in Philippines and Egypt, and I will have these many people. No, I did not see that happening. I did not plan it that way. I was trying to get rid of my W-2. So.
Right.
That was
right. Right. And I also believe, you know, when life, but also business comes in phases, right? When you get started, you're just focused on, hey, let me get this thing off the ground.
Yeah.
And then once you take it off the ground, you're like, hey, there is opportunity there, you know. I can grow this thing much bigger than only taking it off the ground. And then you get to the next phase. But it also has to do with mindset, I believe. Once your mindset, or let's say most of entrepreneurs, their mindset is always growing. And when they get to the next level, they see they connect the dots and see how big this thing can go, and they just keep growing and growing. What's your take on that?
Yes, absolutely. It's like taking a trail. When you're at the bottom of the trail, you can't imagine how beautiful it is at the top. But once you start taking that trail and you start taking up those elevations, you say, damn, I didn't imagine it looked so beautiful. And when you reach at the top, like, amazing, I'm glad that I took that trail, right? So it's kind of also in business. Like when you start the business, you don't know how it's going to pan out. But once you start building the business, it's like, okay, I can do this too. I can do this too. We have positions in the company that I never thought that would be a position. New positions are opening up because we are scaling and new things are coming up that needs a person to manage and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, sorry. I think I answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so obviously I believe you're a great negotiator. I can already tell that you're a great negotiator. How much do you believe you can teach other people in your team to be a good negotiator, to learn from Anshul and do the things that Anshul does on a day-to-day basis?
Interesting enough, I don't remember the last time I negotiated a property. I don't negotiate anymore. And it goes to duplicating yourself. And I think I did not do that right from day one. That wasn't my intent to duplicate myself. But along the way, I end up duplicating resources on my team that can negotiate probably as good as I do on certain deals, right? Now, if it comes to a $1 million deal, sure, I'm going to poke my head into it, right? Otherwise, I don't have to look into day-to-day negotiations anymore, right? But I'm not the best negotiator on the team. I think Mariam in Egypt, I think she negotiates some property better than I do. She's a hard closer. I don't think I'm as hard as a closer as she is, which is something that I learned from her, right?
Wow.
So it's interesting. And we are still in the process of, we have an external coach who comes, role plays, negotiates. Mm-hmm. We do all that kind of good stuff. But it is definitely, it can be duplicated. I can tell you that. Because I thought the only role that I will do in the company is of negotiation because nobody else can do it. And I was wrong. Because somebody took that skill from me and said, you know what? I can do it. Don't worry about it.
There you go.
And she gave me the confidence that this is something that I can let go at some point in time. And she trained 3 more people that are closing deals now along with her. Yeah, so it's fascinating how we think and how actually things happen. I mean,
Anshul, I wonder, somebody who has built and is still growing a business in a size of you are doing, does somebody like you still get self-doubt?
I'll be lying if I say no, right? There are days when I say, hey, can I do it? $100 million company. And there are days it says, man, come on, get out of here. You can't do it. There is no way you can turn this thing into $100 million. And there are other days when I say, you know what? We are on our way to do $10 million this year as a revenue. It's only 10X. Come on. Grant Cardone says just 10X everything. Why can't we 10X this 100 million? Yeah, man, it really depends on the day. But there are more days where I think I can than the days where I think I can. And I think that's the thing that keeps you going in business. The more days you can believe in yourself than the days where you doubt yourself, I think you'll come out positive. Mm-hmm. But there are self-doubts. There are a lot of self-doubts till today. If I can run this business, I'm trying to turn it into a 10 million. Can I take it to 50? Do I have it in me? Do I have that kind of leadership in me? Do I have that kind of maybe charisma in me? Can I handle that kind of money, right? Like the biggest thing is like, I'm not coming from a rich family. Can you handle that kind of money? How do we handle that kind of money? I don't know, right? We'll figure it out. So yeah, there are doubts.
So when it comes to entrepreneurship, how much do you believe it's about mindset and how much is skills?
I think it's, look, if I can do it, right? I think a lot of people can do it. My advantage is my mindset. You can beat me on mindset. I will beat more of the people on mindset, right? Like I'm a guy who it's very difficult for me, for you to put me in a negative position, to make me think anything negative. It's hard for me to do that. I'm just naturally not built that way, right? So I think for entrepreneurship, yes, it's a mindset game, because a lot of things I do in my business, I'm not best at. So I've hired people who can do better than me, but I have the capacity and tenacity to think that it could be done. And that comes from here and not the skill set. Like, I'm not the best in negotiations in my company, and I know that, right? But that wouldn't stop me building a $50 or $100 million company, right? Because here I'm very hard-headed. I know that I can do it. I'm going to just hire the right people, whatever I need to do it. I'm just cruising along. So yes, it is I think it's a mindset game, more of a mindset game, entrepreneurship. It's like similar to maybe sports. I think the legends maybe are not very super high on skill set, but they are super, super ranked, super high on their mindset. And they kind of make up for that skill set if they are deficient with their extreme mindset. I think that's the case with, like, you know, the legends that we talk about, but I might be wrong. I don't know.
So Anshul, what's your secret on developing that unshakable mindset that you have?
You got to hang out with people who are similar or better than you. And that's what I started doing 7 years back. Like, I have attended every single Grant Cardone's growth conference in the last 7 years. And that has fueled my mind like nothing else. Because I'm hearing the same themes over and over again in these last 7 years about entrepreneurship, what mindset is, how you can scale the businesses. Now it has become gospel to me. Grant Cardone's always say there's only one thing that you need to worry about in the business, and that is revenue. One number that you need to focus in business, that is revenue. Where is your revenue going? Don't worry about the expenses. The companies that are big companies, expenses come along with it. You do not run the business of increasing expenses. You focus on revenue and everything else. Like, things like that, I could have not imagined myself or thought myself. But when I go to these places and big guys who have made multiple figure businesses, they have the common theme, then it makes you think, yes, this is how you do things. And it has helped me in the business tremendously. Like, me coming, hiring people and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't, I don't have to validate myself. Should I hire 5 more people from Philippines? Like, I'm not going and asking anybody. I know if I have to grow the business, I have to increase my top line, I need more people, right? So, yeah, I think because I'm not that smart, so I thought, like, I got to hang out with people who are smarter than me. Like, I have no other choice, but I got to find those people who has done things better than me. I'm a good learner and observer and maybe copy you, but I need the person that I can copy. So I've tried to copy these legends, right? Grant Cardone, Gary Vaynerchuk, Donald Trump, what they're doing, how they're doing. If I can copy their mindset, maybe a 1% of what they do, maybe I can do something good in my life and in my business. That has been my chase.
By the way, Anshul, you're being very humble, and I tell you why. Because I have heard not only from one person, but multiple people, that you're actually one of the smartest people in the land, maybe also outside of the land business, but in the land business, and many people look up to you. So I'm sure you know that, but if you don't know it, now you know.
Look, people might be following me, what I'm doing, but I tell you, Ali, I'm not the smartest. And I tell you that because ever since my education in my college, I know I do not get the concepts in the first place. I'm not the smartest. But my recipe is I can think the biggest. I hate to think small. And that makes up for me not the smartest person in the room. I can work the hardest than anybody else. And that makes up for my deficiency that I'm not the smartest person. I do not think about the concept as fast as my peer can. And I know that. School has taught me, college has taught me, I have people around me, right, who are so damn smart, before even I can think about a concept, they are coming up with answers. So I know I'm not that guy, but I know I can think bigger than these guys, and I know I can work harder. And that makes up for me not being the smartest person.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when you say you know, when it comes to thinking big, people think, might think, oh, I can think big, but yeah. Hey, this is only one part, one piece of the puzzle. The other piece is being dedicated and going all in and doing whatever it takes and more, you know, because if you're just thinking big, nothing is going to happen, right? If you sit under a tree, think big all day, every day, nothing is going to change. But you got to get out there and do the work that it takes for you to get to your goals and your visions.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Now I'm going to say, like, it's hard to think big for too many days and not take action.
Absolutely.
Like, at some point in time, either you're going to quit thinking big or you'll say, you know what, it's time that I do something about it. Most of the people don't think big, so they don't have this botheration going on that I have to take action. I've met so many people and they do not work sometimes as much as I do because they're not thinking big. They're good because they have met their goals, because their goals are the way that they design and they don't have to go that far. So good for them because they're not thinking big and they're good. They're happy where they are. Sometimes people are happy. Like, I know people when, like, they don't want to get bothered. They're happy. They enjoy great family time. Good for them. But it's hard to think big for long and not take action. At some point in time, you're going to get out of the bed and start working.
Absolutely. So I have a burning question, and I wonder what your answer is going to be.
Yeah.
What do you think when it comes to growing a business like you do, focusing on one thing versus doing several projects, you know, doing this, doing this, doing this, and growing simultaneously, maybe one, two, three projects versus going all in and focusing on one thing and all you have, you put out there and you go all in on one thing?
Yep. Well, the part of entrepreneur says I can run multiple businesses. That's the ego part, where you should have gone all in on one business and make it super successful, right? Mark Zuckerberg did not do Instagram and all that kind of stuff on day one until Facebook was amazing, right? Elon Musk did not open three companies. He made PayPal successful, sold it before he ventured out and that kind of stuff. So a part of thing, I think a part of entrepreneur says I can, because I know how to do businesses, I can go and start another one. But at the same time, that's a disservice to your existing business. And I have fallen into that trap. And I have learned that you should go all in with your existing business, build it to the point that you don't have to do it every day. You don't have to manage every day. Once you get to the point that you don't have to manage your business every day, that would be a good time to think about a second business. But up until that time, you're doing a disservice to your existing business if you do so. So that's my thing. I did start second business. It was an Airbnb business. Delve into it. I loved it. But you know what? Because of that, my first business started getting impacted. Now I moved that business and I handed it over to my wife. She runs it. Because we got it to the point that it was, you know, it was cash flow positive and whatnot. And I still have a lot of passion doing an Airbnb business and scaling it, something that I need to do, but not at the expense of gold soil realty investments, because I really, truly want to turn this thing into whatever, how far I can take it. So, yeah, I guess I answer your question, but yeah, I learned it the hard way.
So looking back to your entrepreneurial journey, what has been the biggest lessons personally, financially, but also physically for you, if you look back?
That's a loaded question. Biggest lesson, entrepreneurship journey. I really don't know, man, the answer to that part, because I'm kind of learning things every day. I really don't know if I have an answer, but... financially, I would say pour every single dollar, penny that you make in the business back into the business. Of course, you got to have living expenses put aside or whatever you want to do. You got to put everything back into the business. I don't know. I'm just kind of still going through the motions, Ali, where right. It's kind of hard for me to kind of look back and say, oh, these are the mistakes that I did with money. These are the mistakes that I do personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through the motions right now. I do not have that perspective just yet.
Right.
If you were to ask me what you would have done differently or what one lesson did you learn financially, mm-hmm. I don't think I have traveled the road enough mm-hmm. to answer that question just right. Maybe mm-hmm. 10 years from now, you come back and ask me that question, I might have a better answer.
I see. I'll keep that in mind to ask you in 10 years.
Yeah.
Was there anyone that changed, you know, has had an impact in your entrepreneurial journey that you're like, hey, this person or this mentor whatsoever had a huge impact, changed everything for me?
You know, I have been ardently following Grant Cardone.
Mm-hmm.
I have been ardently following, you know, people like Gary Vaynerchuk. I have studied them, read them to a certain level, and I would attribute a lot of my business success to them. You know, Grant told me one thing, say, look, if you make $1 million, never ask another person who's making $1 million for any kind of advice.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to a person who's making 100x more money than you for any kind of advice, mm-hmm. which kind of puts me in a very difficult situation because there are not many people around you. And I said, like, you know what? I'm not going to go to a guy who's making $5 million because mm-hmm. that person is still learning their thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to people who have really gone very far in their journeys and they can really help me with me, my business, and my mindset. So I really try to close my proximity with these people, either paid coaching and whatever, but that's where I draw my inspiration from. That's where I draw my concept from. I do not go to a guy who's running a similar land business and say, what do you think? I'm not going to do it because I want to learn from a guy who's running a $1 billion business and ask him that question.
Mm.
How did you do it versus a guy who, you know, running a $5 million business? Because they are still going through the motions of the thing where you are. And it's just. So things like that have really helped me to kind of grow the business the way I'm growing. So, I mean, you would not find many land investors who may be kind of growing the business the way I'm growing.
Absolutely not.
I'm not saying that I'm growing it like huge, but the way I'm trying to grow the business, there are not many land investors who have kind of put their hands in the pot and grow that way, right? This kind of mindset did not come from me. This kind of mindset did not came from another peer land investor. There are many things that I learned from my land investors, but scaling the business is not one of them. All due respect to them, that they have taught me a lot of things, you know, maybe do a better due diligence, how to write a better marketing copy. But scaling the business leadership is not something, you know, that I have learned from the community. It kind of came more from people like this that observe what they're doing and can I apply in my business. Like when I went to Grant Cardone's office, there are like 75 salespeople on one floor.
Wow.
When they're banging on the phone, they're making money. I was like, why can't we do it? Like my question, like, why can't I have an office like this where there are 75 people on the phone making money, selling deals, that kind of stuff, right? It's kind of hard to find those people and see them and learn from them. There are not many people around who's kind of doing that kind of stuff. So anyways,
Anshul, if you had to start all over again and all you had was $1,000, what would you do?
Man, I'm going to spend the $1,000. I'm going to buy 10 books that will spend my $200. And then I'm going to spend another $800 with a person who's making $1 million, spend probably 2 or 3 hours with them and see if they can give me a course, give me something so I can make my $1 million. And then, you know, you can throw $25,000, $30,000 on different kinds of coaching and kind of go from there. But if I have 100 books and I have to start over again, I'm going to buy 10 books or 5 books. Okay. That's the best investment that you can ever do in your life. If you got 100 bucks or 500 bucks, you go nowhere. You buy the best 15 books or 20 books ever written on planet Earth. And you read them. That's the best.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. It just came shooting off the hip. Like I had asked you 10 times these questions before, But I love you know the way you just came up with it. So Anshul, before we wrap up, I would like to ask you a final questions. What advice would you have for someone who is about to get into entrepreneurship, you know, is somewhere in between and is asking themselves, oh, is it for me? Is it not for me? What advice do you have for them?
If you're asking if it is for me, then it's not probably for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough world out there as an entrepreneur. You should be ready to bleed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to bleed at some point in time, man. I mean, if you want to scale the business, there's a lot of headache. There's a lot of stuff that comes along with it. But it's like going to the gym. Some people like to sweat in the gym and they feel good and they don't complain going to the gym. Others, you can, even if you give a year long membership free for the gym, they're not going to step in the gym for a day. So if you are thinking, debating, if it is for me, probably it's not for you. And it's a very harsh kind of answer. But the people who are really, they do not ask for permission. They're not thinking whether it's for them or not. They're already doing it. And if they fail, they fail. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just one of those things. So if you are like thinking if it's for me or for not for me, it's probably not for you. Because I never asked anybody if entrepreneurship is for me or not. I didn't ask for permission.
Mm.
Those are the people who are asking permission. In entrepreneurship, you don't ask permission. You go right. Do, and then either you win or you lose. In either ways, you are peace and you move on, right? Mm. So if you are that kind of person, you probably can be a great executive at a great company and nothing wrong with it. You might have a high six-figure, seven-figure salary. But if you are asking those questions to yourself over and over again, you might not be best suited for it. You can still go for it. I don't know. But I never asked that question to myself. So I never had, can I do it? Should I do it? No, I have to do it. This is my destiny kind of thing. And I'm not asking my mom. I'm not asking my wife. You know, I was married at the time when I started. I didn't ask her. I told her. Like, we going with this.
Mm.
Okay. I didn't ask her, should I quit my job? No, I'm quitting. You're coming along with me, by the way, on this ride. And this is how we're going to do it. Mm. Right? So, because if you cannot make decision, you're not decisive. You cannot be an entrepreneur in the first place. We have to make 20 decisions in one day, big or small. We don't look around. We don't ask people for permission. We don't ask people what to do. We just take decision and we move on, kind of thing. Right?
Absolutely. 100%.
That's what I would think.
100%. So any final advice, you know, things that you would want to share, anything that I should have asked you, maybe I missed on it, that, you know, anything that would want to or would want come from you that you want to tell our audience, hey, keep this in mind, regardless of where they are in their journey, either thinking of becoming an entrepreneur or are already entrepreneur and, you know, keep doing their thing. Any final advice from you?
I would say, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you got to be happy with what you're doing, right? And the barometer in my life that I keep myself is, am I happy? I got to ask that question to myself. And I don't have to fool myself. There's the entire world to fool you. You don't have to do to yourself, right? And I ask that question to myself. Am I happy? Is this what I wanted to do, right? And, you know, I try to be honest. And am I getting a yes or am I getting a no? And ever since I have got the company and have scaled it, I have never found myself more happier. It's weird, right? Because I'm working longer hours. I'm traveling more.
Right.
It's more pain. Right. But like, I have still found myself much happier in a very weird way because I'm helping somebody. I'm mentoring somebody. Somebody looks up to me. I have to like, there's a pleasure that comes with mentoring somebody, changing somebody's life, somebody looking up to you all that kind of stuff, right? So I would say, like, some, like, do not get carried away that you have to do a big company. Mm-hmm. You got to ask the question, am I happy, right? And that could be doing a great job at a billion-dollar company, or that could be running your business. If you are not cool scaling the business, do not get carried away with somebody's thought process that you have to build a $50 million company. No, you don't. Because if that doesn't make you happy, why would you do that? Because the process, the journey is so hard that if you're not enjoying it, you're not doing it, but you're doing it for somebody else's sake, or somebody else said that, or you're doing or comparing yourself with somebody else, you will be very miserable. Mm-hmm. So my thing would be, gotta have a happy barometer and just ask yourself, are you happy? Do you want to continue doing what you're doing? And if the answer is yes, then you keep going. If no, then you have to do something different. Because the goal is being happy and motivated and alive, as they say, right? You gotta be alive, right? And if you're not alive, right, you gotta check into that. So that would be my thing. If you're an entrepreneur, non-entrepreneur, have a job, don't have a job, you just gotta check in with yourself. Are you happy what you're doing? And that's what I check with myself. Am I happy? If I'm not, I need to change things. If I'm happy, just keep going.
These are amazing final words. Anshul, you have no idea how much respect I have for you, not only because you got on this call and on this podcast at 2 a.m. local time, but also for what you do. And you travel the world, you inspire all these people, you also help these people to, you know, feed their family and create the future they want. So thank you again for who you are and what you do, and just the amazing things that you do in this world. I think the world needs more people like you.
Dude, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I tell you this, I got to part with this thought. I'm just feeding myself. I'm a very selfish guy. I want to keep myself happy, right? And when I help somebody, or somebody says, you know what, you changed my thing. And you know what, you're just feeding my soul right now. I'm very selfish. I do everything, anything I can do to keep myself happy. If that helps you, congratulations. Right. But my job is first thing to keep myself happy, because I'm a guy who needs to wake up and say, you know what, today's a great day. It's a new day. Let's roll. Get some fun. Get some work done. And kind of, you know, yeah. But hey, thanks for having me. I think we overwent with the whole thing. We overran the thing, but I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So did I. Thank you for coming on once again. And I hope we meet soon or one day in person, Anshul.
We need to. It shouldn't be a choice. We should put it on the calendar. Whenever you are back in the States, or I happen to be that side of the world, we need to come and meet. So
absolutely. We will make that happen. Thanks again once more, and all the best.
Thank you.